I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The Andy J Podcast. The Andy J Podcast. The Andy J Podcast.
Episode 100 of the Andy J Podcast. Goodness me. Hello, you. Welcome to this landmark show. Crikey, we've had a lot of conversations to get to here. Those of you that have been listening from the beginning will know that there are several shows which aren't just one guest per show. In fact, in the early days, we had several, and then we had bonus spin-off shows and so on and so forth. But the majority, I would say 65-70% of the episodes that we've put out have been just myself and one guest, and usually for around an hour or more. And I've really loved being able to do that format, actually. It's been really, really rewarding. Let me tell you, today's guest, we have decided, because it's episode 100, to go with someone mega, someone really great, someone that I admire so much. I just think he's brilliant. He's made me laugh for decades. He is the incredible Harry Hill. Now, Harry is chatting to us about a number of things. He's going on tour later this year. If you're listening in real time, it's February 2022. If you're listening in real time, he'll be on tour in October and November and probably going into 2023 and so on. But also, before then, if you'd like to see Harry live, he will be performing at the Park Theatre later this month or perhaps early March in a show called Whodunit Unrehearsed 2, which has a whole range of amazing celebrities that will appear as a special guest in the show for one-off performances. They're handed an earpiece, they're fed the lines, and the rest of the actors, they know what they're doing. So the whole thing is basically hilarious. If you want to know more about that, do check out the Park Theatre website, because they have amazing guests that will be performing this lead role, this celebrity guest role, including Ian McKellen and Emma Thompson. And of course, Harry Hill being one of them. You heard from Clive Anderson on one of the pods just the other day. And Jez Bond, of course, the man who we had as episode number 99. If you'd like to hear all about the show, do check out the Jez Bond episode, because he is the brainchild of the whole thing. In fact, he's the mastermind of the Park Theatre. So that's how you can see Harry. Nonetheless, how can we hear from him? By me shutting up and introducing the amazing Harry Hill.
Podcast.
He's a man I have tickets to see in October. I've seen him live many, many times, and I'm going to start with a question for him, which I have been dying to ask for about 20 years. It's the one and only Harry Hill. Hey, Harry.
Hello there. When are you coming? When in the autumn are you coming then?
I'm going to be at your first show in Guildford.
Oh, Guildford, G Live.
Yeah.
It's that's always a good one. The best thing about it is you can get home after. I'm actually trying out some stuff, you know, because I haven't toured for so long. I haven't toured for, God knows, 9 years or something. And I'm trying some stuff. Actually, I'm trying some stuff out tonight in some little pub in East Sussex.
Oh, fantastic.
It's a pub anyway. Yeah. I've got a new prop, actually. I won't bring it over, but it's...
Look on your face, you kind of want to. You half want to bring the prop over.
Yeah, it turned up last night. Should I go and get it?
Yeah.
You've got to see this.
Yeah.
You've got to see this,
that
Andy.
That would be wonderful. Oh, my goodness me.
The big Andy.
It's an enormous tuba.
I should get 5 minutes out of that, shouldn't I?
Or 20.
Yeah.
Are you learning? Yeah. Have you learned to play it? Or are you just...
It only turned up last night. Cut me some slack.
I mean, I felt like you were already a virtuoso on it. So you're nearly there. I mean, by October, you're going to have to go to the gym in order to be able to do a proper session with that, aren't you? You could maybe...
I've got a few...
You could maybe get the caveman outfit out again and do the full, you know...
Oh, You're not such a fan that you've seen that, though.
I have seen that.
You haven't.
I'm a horribly fanboy-y.
Grief.
Yeah, no, it's...
Where did you see it? I've only done it twice, haven't I?
I believe it was at the Banana Cabaret in Balham.
Oh.
If that rings any bells.
Okay. All right. Okay. Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Okay.
Long time ago. Now, Harry, the question that I have been dying to ask you for 20 years, and this is purely for me, you and I have met once before fleetingly, and it was...
I thought you were vaguely familiar, I'll be honest.
I have that vaguely familiar vibe about me. Most people think I'm vaguely familiar. You and I, we had a chat, and it was in the reception.
We're using the same microphone, aren't we? I just noticed we're using the same...
You've got a better pop shield than me, but, you know, it's...
Microphone. It's
the same mic. I'm glad you pointed that out.
Sorry, yeah, carry on.
We had a lovely chat. It was a very strange but lovely chat. It was in reception at Gray's Inn Road, the old ITV building, right?
Right.
We were both in to see Commissioners. It was one of those ones that this was quite early in my telly career, and it was after the Channel 4 stuff had finished for you. And you, this is the only reason why I think you might remember it. Well, two reasons, actually. The first one is you were decked out in the most astonishing outfit. It was remarkable. You had a lot of clothes on. All of them were clashing tweed.
Right.
Is that ringing any bells? Lots of clothes. All of them are different tweed. It was astonishing. Yeah. It was a masterpiece to look at. And I wondered, and I have been wondering, if that was the meeting where TV Burp was signed off. Because it was about
2000, was it? I think that was about 2000 when that got, because they commissioned me to make a show called, no one remembers this show, which was the All New Harry Hill Show, which is like a kind of, it's supposed to be a mainstream version of the old Channel 4 show. And, but actually I was looking at some of it the other, because it was on this book tour. And one of the sketches was the posthumous, Olympics, all right, which involved basically six coffins being pushed into Richmond swimming baths and being pulled along with like outboard motors. So, and I'm not sure it necessarily fulfilled the brief.
Did it not land?
But that was commissioned for a series, but part of the deal was that they would also give me a pilot for something else. And it was this Sideways Look at the Week's TV, which obviously ended up as TV Burp.
Yes, yes.
And so that ran for about 10 years in the end, I think.
Well, at the very least, do you remember the outfit, Harry? Do you remember decking yourself out?
Well, I got rid of that coat only 2 years ago. I got rid of it. But I still have the suit.
Good. Because this was back in the day when you were still asking people if they liked the lining. The collars were still significant.
You liked the lining. I'm thinking maybe bringing some of that back. You know, what do you think, Andy?
I mean, I was hoping there'd be a few more, you know, the...
Ride the nostalgia wave.
Why not? I mean, there's a whole army of people that have practiced it, have done it on each other in the pub. You know, I mean...
Do you ever see David Letterman doing... You know, I did the David Letterman show a few times and he started doing it.
He'd go,
I've got a video of it. And he's going, you like my lining? Let's get that guy back.
Well, I do have a thank you. I do have to thank you for, because obviously a lot of your comedy is educational and you did teach me the difference between stalactites and stalagmites because you've got to have a system.
It's a simple way to remember it. Yeah.
I feel this is going to be a very much an in on the joke type of conversation. I'm just going to bring up some of your old gags and see if you remember them.
Someone did that on that book tour. Someone shouted out, it was a question and answer thing, and they asked me how many scoops of mash I like to have, which is obviously a reference to this old long-winded gag I had. And I honestly couldn't remember it. I think maybe there's something in there. I don't know if jokes aren't quite like songs, are they? Where if you had a hit song, you could... you could sing it every night, and people would still want to hear it. But with a joke, if you know what the ending is, I think.
Well, this is where you could just change the ending every time, so people expect you're going a certain way, and people think you're going to do it, and then suddenly, you know.
Mm.
But there are certain, you've got beats that you know you can go to. You know you can bring out Stoofer, and that's going to get a massive kind of applause. The Badgers, incidentally, on the Badgers, have you had any sort of thank you for saving Gareth Southgate's career? Because he became a huge thing after you had a badger called
Gareth Southgate. I bumped into Gareth Southgate I never saw him at the time, you know, and that's even longer ago, isn't it? So 25
years ago. This is his playing career. It was well before managerial career. So I wonder.
Yeah, so I never met him at the time. And I bumped into him and he said to me, "Oh, hi, Harry." He goes, "Why do you call that badger Gareth Southgate badger?" And I said, "Oh, I don't know, Gareth." But obviously it was because he missed that. I felt like saying, "You missed that penalty."
Yeah, have a guess. So,
yeah. Yeah. So it was just in the air, wasn't it? It wasn't anything personal. But it was funny to meet him. Because it was every week, wasn't it? Gareth Southgate badger and Tasman Archer badger.
Yes, Tasman Archer.
And there was David Beckham badger, I think, as well. Yeah. I still got them.
Good times. Good times.
Storage box.
Do you look back on, I mean, how does your sort of comedy...
I try not to.
How does your comedy memory work? Do you remember gigs for gags, for things that worked and achieved, things that landed and slammed? Or do you remember it for the audience, for the fact that you farted in the green room beforehand or whatever it might have been?
Well, there's some you remember because things happened. Like, I mean, I remember one on the last tour, I fell through the stage at in Newcastle.
Oh.
I was playing the front of the stage, they put this kind of plywood thing on with lights. I think it was because often you're appearing, when you're doing one-nighters, you appear on like the set of something that's already in.
So, right.
And I stepped forward. Onto this plywood, and my foot went straight through, and I fell off the stage and landed. I landed on the laps of the people in the front row, and then rolled off the laps onto the floor. Right, and because I had the band with me, they were like the keyboard player walked to the front, and because I basically disappeared as far as the audience were concerned,
it's part of the show.
Yeah, and I jumped up. I'm alive. And it was really, really funny. And I almost couldn't top it. You know, everything I did after that wasn't quite as funny as falling off the stage.
The visual
those
gags.
Sort of things. You know, I remember once there was a bloke who he had a some sort of, I think it was a heart attack or something, and the ambulance had to turn up. The interval was an hour long because of, you know, things like that. Or I remember one I did in... where the hell was it? In the middle of the act, this guy walks up. He stripped down to his underpants, just walked down the aisle in the theatre, walked up onto the stage and stood there.
Crikey.
And I'm going, oh, hello, you know, and I'm thinking any minute now someone's going to, you know, drag him to the ground and bundle him out of the building. But no, and after a while he wandered back.
Well, he just stood there?
Yeah. I think he had taken something.
Oh, okay.
And I said to the stage manager afterwards, I said, why didn't someone, he said, I thought it was part of the act.
Amazing. Amazing. I mean, with the heart attack guy, two questions on him. Firstly, is he okay now? Obviously, we've got to check. Do you know? Have you had an update on his?
Well, it's a long time ago.
Right.
But he was, I think, you know, he was, he went to, they took him to hospital. He stretched it off.
Okay.
To hospital. Yeah. And he's laughing too much. It was too funny.
It was so funny. Someone's heart collapsed on them, but the obviously the other thing is it was a very well known thing. You were a doctor before you were a comedian. Did you sort of leap in and do the doctor in the house route and save him, or was that not appropriate?
I knew that the ambulance was on its way. I mean, the problem is now I'm more dangerous. You know, it's that thing of having a little bit of knowledge. You know, not, I don't really know enough. I don't remember enough to be particularly helpful. I think I'd be more dangerous than them. And help. I remember I was on the way to the last time I stopped for a kind of medical emergency. It was maybe 10 years ago. I was on the way to a friend's, 18th birthday party. I was a godfather. Anyway, driving along, come around the corner and there's a car with the door swung open. And there's a bike with a bloke lying on the floor. So I drove straight past and the kid said to me, "You need to get back, Dad, don't you?" There were a few people around. I thought, oh, God. So I reversed back up. And this guy's sort of lying there. And I couldn't think of anything, of the things you're supposed to do, right? And I said to the bloke lying there, and there was a few people around, I said, have you been drinking, sir? And he said, yes. And I said to the bloke with him, I said, have you called for an ambulance? He said, yes. And I said, okay, well, I need to go now.
Wow.
Yeah, it was like Superman, you know. Let me throw him just, a doctor.
Yeah, I'm fine. Yeah.
Yeah, so I love, the long and the short of it is, you know, although it's, you know, everyone talks about me being a doctor, it is like 30 years ago now.
Yeah, yeah,
so
yeah.
Longer even.
Because yeah. you had the chance, sorry to pry, but you had the chance to kind of revisit doctoring during the COVID.
Yeah, they got in touch. Yeah, that's how desperate things were. They got in touch with me. Yeah, I got this right around Robin because I was still on the records, you know, as a retired doctor.
Okay.
Yeah, I got this round robin from the GMC saying, you know, will you come back? We're looking for retired doctors, return to work and all this. And I, in a kind of public-spirited way, and after, you know, a couple of gin and tonics, I clicked on the link. And before I knew it, it was a bit like a sort of Franz Kafka thing. I'm ticking these boxes. And before I know it, there's a lady on the phone to me wanting to talk to me about my return to work.
Amazing.
And by that, yeah, I was really anxious about it, I'll be honest. Really. I was. Part of it was they sent me this kind of link to get me back up to speed. So there's a series of tutorials, right, that you had to... And so I started doing one, and it was taking me hours. And I said, "Christ, this is it's going to take 5 years."
So it wasn't multiple choice then.
I can't. You know, it's like it wasn't easy. You know, it wasn't like just I remember like that. It was really? Everything's changed. You know, I don't even. You know, I mean, when I was a doctor, there were only, you know, there were different antibiotics, and you know, it's all, everything's changed.
Yeah,
believe me.
So it didn't.
Yeah, you know, there's a reason. Yeah, there's a reason why you have to keep up to speed.
So you couldn't write a prescription now, could you? Or was that still?
Well, I think I could now. I think I could now because they said that's a very good point. What do you want?
I mean, I've got a list. I'll send it to you if that's all right.
Yeah. So I am back fully registered. I think now, but unless they've changed, I don't know. But yeah, it ended up with this FaceTime call with this lady. They asked me to start work on Monday at the Nightingale Hospital, the XL Nightingale Hospital, which is terrifying. And she said, well, you know, we'll be in touch with you. And then fortunately, everyone was washing their hands and, you know, staying indoors. And, you know, they never actually pressed that into action, did they, that
okay.
giant hospital?
Yes, yes, the massive one. So they didn't say, oh, well, could you go here? When she FaceTimed you... Did she recognize?
No, because I know. That's why I thought this is it. I thought to myself, oh yeah, we'll do the FaceTime. She'll recognize. Yeah. You'll have a laugh.
Did you put the big collar on and you know, probably?
Well, I had a beard.
Yourself?
Oh, you know, everyone had a beard in the lockdown. Yeah, I was cursing my facial hair, and you know, and she. I'll be honest. She didn't look like an ITV viewer.
Oh, that's a shame.
She looked more like a sort of Radio 4. You know, curled up on the sofa with a Hilary Mantel.
That's a shame. I mean, that could have been That could have been a fun moment.
Yeah. I was thinking, oh well, you know, yes, it's me, of course. Yeah, I put you down for tickets, Dawn. You know, you come to fast track your nephews onto Junior Bake Off, and we'd all have a laugh about it. But no,
no,
yeah,
not going to happen.
They were desperate. Although my friend who is a doctor, so I get as soon as I get off that FaceTime, I call my friend. So I've got a few friends who are still doctors. And he's a GP, and he says, I don't know why they're asking you. He said, we've got nothing to do here. You know, because the GPs, they all closed their surgery.
Yeah, yeah.
Pretty much. He said, you know, I'm embarrassed every Thursday when they're standing on the steps clapping. He said he hasn't. He's been hiding in his house. But I'm sure that's the most typical story.
I was going to say, I think that's probably just unique to him. Fair enough.
Yes, it was.
Harry, I'm mindful of time and all the rest of it. We've got a lot to talk about. We've got a lot to plug. Can we talk quickly about this incredible... You're kind of going out on a limb here, even for you, who have done everything and worked in front of every crowd and all the rest of it. I would suggest that this is something that even you and a man of your skills has never taken on before. And this is a show that you will be guesting in at the Park Theatre. It's called Whodunit Unrehearsed 2. And nobody knows what night you'll be performing. Nobody knows what night anyone will be performing. There's a bunch of celebrities, and it's almost like a kind of one of those Wheel of Fortune, spin the wheel draws. Who are
and
they going to get?
And you walk out. Yeah, and they've got lots of really They've got some great people. You know, they've got Lee Mack. Have you heard of him? Lee Mack.
He rings a bell. He's a comedian. Isn't
David
he?
Mitchell. Yeah. All those. All the Would I Lie to You team. And so, yeah, the idea is that you. What they've told me is that I just turn up at 6:30, and you put an earpiece in.
Yeah.
So I don't see the script. The cast are all rehearsed, and it's a whodunit. It's a murder mystery, and I'm fed the lines through an earpiece by someone backstage.
That's right.
So, yeah. So I thought that sounds like fun. And, you know, I'm a fan of the Park Theatre. Have you ever been to the Park Theatre in Finsbury Park?
Many, many times. I'm extremely good friends with the guy who built it, Jez Bond.
Jez.
Yes.
Jez Bond, who is an absolute force of nature, isn't he?
He is.
He's one of the most enthusiastic people I've ever met.
It's exhausting. I've known him my entire adult life. He ages me every time. Love him.
Yeah. He's very can do, but you know, the long and the short of it is that his theatre, like a lot of theatres, have really been struggling because of the lack of revenue from the various lockdowns and so forth. So it's a fundraiser, really, to keep the place going. And I am doing, and he hasn't told me when. He's given me two options, and he says he's going to confirm it. So I couldn't even tell you if I wanted to what night I'm doing it, but. Who knows what it'll be like? Have you been to it before?
I have. I saw Jason Manford doing it. And,
oh, right.
It was fun. You know, it's really interesting because they've got this amazing, it's a sort of who's who. That some of the guest names are astonishing.
But yeah.
It's a blend of the comedians that you've mentioned and then, of course, some real stalwart actors, you know, like Ian McKellen and Emma Thompson and Gillian
Maureen
Anderson.
Lippman.
Exactly. Caroline Quentin. I mean, they're huge, huge names performing. Mm. And so I'm
Ronan Keating, I see, is doing it.
That'll be a bit of a wild card one as well because, of course, the actors,
they'll
bring a very sort of theatrical performance, I'd have thought. You know, they're being the big detective. Whereas the comedians, you guys are used to working an audience and ad-libbing and so on, but you can't ad-lib too much when it's being pre-blocked and you've got eight other actors on stage with you doing their thing. It's going to be a lot of fun.
I know Tim Vine did it last time and he said it was a real laugh, which is part of the reason they did it. Yeah.
It is terrific. So and the audience is all on your side as well, which always helps.
Yeah, initially anyway. That's the, and that is the 9th to the 12th of March, isn't it? That little run.
That's right.
I don't know what, it's sort of 7:30 start or something.
Yeah, and I think there are some weekend matinees as well. There's a lot of performances. I mean, it's parktheatre.co.uk for details because it's, I mean, tickets are selling like hotcakes, Harry. So it's the
good.
Hottest ticket
in town.
Well,
that's the thing. Yeah, and, you know, part of my interest in the Park Theatre is that Jez has helped us. You know, we've written this musical about Tony Blair, so he has helped. You know, we did a little work in progress there, and we're hoping that will be running at the Park later in the year.
Oh, that's great! Well, that's
if
a different.
It survives the.
That's a different approach, Harry, because you previously had a musical which. You're laughing now. I mean, it was a musical about sort of about the X Factor, sort of about Simon Cowell. And didn't you put it on somewhere massive, like the London Palladium? I mean,
well, that's the irony, Andy, is that we, you know, our last musical opened at the London Palladium, 2,400 seats, and this one hopefully will open at the Park Theatre, which is was about 200 seats or something. But yeah,
but isn't that the way to do it? You know, you build it.
Yes.
You bring it.
It's
to,
how everyone does it.
Yeah, not to go in with 2,500 seat capacity from day one, surely.
Yeah, it wasn't our choice, Andy, but it was very exciting. And you know, we got swept along by the whole machismo of the whole thing. You know, like Simon Cowell, it's got to be the. They were falling over themselves to let us have these massive. If there had been a bigger one, we probably would have gone there. it was a lot of fun. A lot of fun. Yes, so that's my kind of slight ulterior motive.
Oh, I see.
You're just staying in
good favour.
I'm trying to save the Park Theatre for my own ends.
Preferential rates as well. I mean, obviously you've written these musicals alongside musicians and so on. But I mean, will you ever perform in it? Could you be Tony Blair? I mean,
he won't let me. The guy that writes, this is my bugbear, Andy. The guy that writes the songs with me, Steve Brown, who has written, you know, he wrote a lot of jingles. So he wrote Wonky Donkey for Anton Deck.
Okay.
You know, so he's just
one of the greats.
He wrote TV Highlight of the Week. and TV Poetry Corner. So he basically, I've known him for a long time. And he is the keyboard player who was stepping forward to see where I'd gone after I fell off the stage in Newcastle.
Brilliant.
But he won't let me, he won't let me be in it.
But that doesn't seem right. Yeah. I mean, isn't that...
I haven't got a good enough voice.
Could you have a speaking role? I mean, this only seems...
Well, not in a musical, mate. Come on.
Well, you kind of could. I saw Harry Enfield in The Windsors, and that was a musical.
How was that? I love that TV show.
Didn't do a lot of singing.
I love that show.
It was a good show. It was a good show, and it was a great theatre musical where he didn't do a lot of singing. You could get away with it like that. You just need bigger ears.
Like sort of talking it. Yeah. Well, my thing is that I can sing, actually, and that he's being a bit uptight.
Seems harsh.
Not letting me be in it.
I can see this is driving a wedge between the two of you. Let's hope it doesn't prevent the show from happening. Let's talk about the tour, Harry, because as you know, I'm coming. I've already been upfront about that, but I was coming long before I knew we were going to chat. So just
are you in Guildford? Do you I'm neck of the woods?
I'm not that close, to be honest. It's a bit of a drive, but it's fine. It's a compromise.
There will be a London date. There will be a London date. Someone said this to me the other day. For some reason,
I've got all the TBA. Dates so far here, and none of them say London, right. Hence me having to default to Guildford. So
yeah, there will be one. There will be one or two even, and I'm also going to put in some new dates, hopefully in the because that takes us to it's October, November, isn't it? Then I'm going to put some in January. Perhaps do a little because there's not a Liverpool one either. There's a few gaps there.
I mean, there's a lot of gigs though. There's a lot of gigs here.
Yeah.
I mean, will you not be exhausted? Yeah. You're starting on the 6th of October. You're touring what looks like pretty much every day until the 27th of November, each one in a different place. There's no nights where you're doing two in one venue. You're going to be knackered, aren't you?
Well, I mean, it is. You can't really do anything during the day is the truth.
Okay.
You know, most of the time you just sort of, it's a funny thing. You know, in the old days I used to, I would come off and knock back great big pints of lager and, all the rest of it. And then the last tour I did, which is, as I say, the last one I did, basically it just would come off stage, get in the car, fall asleep, wake up at home. Tragic, really. I know what you mean. It is, you have to, and I did this, I've been doing some tryouts. And I have found that I have to be sort of match fit. I forgot about how much I move around.
Okay.
Most people don't. Yeah. If you go and see Alan Davis, he sort of stands still.
He could have a dead chair.
He might sort of, parade up and down a bit, but I'm all over the place, particularly with this sousaphone I've got.
Yes, that's true. But you don't, you're not like Lee Evans. You don't kind of finish the show literally made of
drenched in sweat.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not quite. Don't move around as much as him. But he's had to retire. That's why he had to retire. What his joints went.
Is there some apprehension? Because obviously it's been a long time for everybody. It's been a long time since being back on the stage with the COVID delay and everything else. But obviously, as you say, for your tour, life has got in the way for you. Your television success and so on has curtailed your ability to be one-on-one with an audience. So
I got greedy. I got greedy with the TV work, let's face it.
Bank the cash.
What was the question? Well, there is a bit. I mean, it's always... It's the thing is, I think with most comics is you seesaw between thinking that you're brilliant, the funniest thing in the world, and everything you say is funny, to thinking, why am I doing this? No one's going to come, no one's going to laugh. It is a bit of that, really. So, but that's why you have tryouts. You have tryouts, and I've been doing these ones, and I've been really, really enjoying it. It's I think it's partly getting older. It's not that you don't care as much, but you sort of know how it works. Know that some nights will be better than others, but they'll all be. I mean, some of the gigs that I remember as being not particularly good. Years later, I've had people come up to me and say, I saw you I remember one in York on the Hooves tour. And it just sticks in my mind as being tough, like really hard work. And I remember someone coming, oh, I saw you in, on the Hooves tour in York. Oh, you know. And so, you know, your my perception of it is different to, you know, to the punters.
You're listening to the Andy J podcast, and we really appreciate having you here with us. If you're enjoying the show, why not leave us a lovely review and perhaps five stars and subscribe wherever you're listening, as it really does help.
The Andy J podcast.
Yeah, but it's because you know what to expect, whereas they've got something completely new. You know, that's the thing. They've had the night of their lives, where you're like, well, they weren't as good as last night, or that didn't land quite as well as the night before. You'd be hypercritical, you're analysing everything from the audience. You almost judge your audience in a way.
Yeah. I think you have to be, you know, I mean, you can't beat yourself up too much, but I think you have to be tough on yourself. Otherwise, you know, the worst comics are the ones who think they, you know, they stormed it and it was, you know, they didn't storm it. You know, it's, you have to sort of learn. That's how you learn, I guess, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, as somebody that has seen you from the early days, you know, I remember I have a memory of you at Edinburgh Festival at the Fringe. I mean,
really?
You know, about 1,000 years ago, you know, before the sort of persona had fully established, and you were killing it then. In fact, didn't you win an award back then? This is my hazy memory. Apologies if you didn't.
Yeah,
I've really stuck.
Yeah,
I did. Though, didn't you?
Yeah.
I have no memory. I've seen you a lot. I've no memory of you ever even being heckled.
Oh yeah, no, I've had some bad ones. Oh yeah. Well, particularly when I was doing the clubs. I mean, remember Jonglers?
I do remember Jonglers.
Battersea.
Yeah.
So those places, which were big clubs. I mean, most clubs, as you know, in comedy clubs in London are like rooms above pubs. But this was, although it was a room above a pub, it was massive and it was run in a very sort of slightly corporate way. And so at Christmas, they would have big office parties. And I remember going on there and I used to do that beds routine. Do you ever see me do that? I go beds. And it ends up, it's about my dad opening a bed shop and didn't really have a punchline, but it was about, I mean, it ended up with me shouting beds. And they started just shouting it at me and I stopped and they just carried on. So I then had to just walk off. And as I'm walking off, through the crowd, they're all going as they walk past them. So yeah, there have been weird, odd ones. Yeah,
that sounds.
I think any comic
positive.
Will tell you the same.
Yeah, but
well, you know what? They're the best stories. You know, you get the best stories out of the bad ones. Weirdly, you know, when things go wrong, it's much funnier. I mean, you know, I had this autobiography out at Christmas, and that is the sort of the idea of the book. It's sort of more about what has gone wrong. Just because I think it's more entertaining and you do learn, you learn more from it.
Well, you seem surprising. You know? In the autobiography, which is called Fight, incidentally, it 30 years not quite at the top, if I remember?
Yeah.
Also not factually true. But you seem a little harsh on yourself. I mean, is that...
Well, my mum said that. She said, why are you so hard on yourself? But I think, well, my kind of default is position is sort of underdog, you know, self-effacing type thing. And I think that, I think, yeah, honestly, your successes speak for themselves. I don't have to, you know, tell anyone what my successes are because, you know, I've had a lot of success and I've been very lucky. But I think what tends to happen is the kind of flops or things that went wrong tend to be just forgotten.
Right.
You know?
Right. Yeah, they live in your memory, but not necessarily the public's.
Yeah, weirdly, yeah, because you think, oh, yeah, that was, and when you have something that doesn't go quite right, you know, like the musical or, you know, the time I was a DJ for Capital Radio, no one remembers them. No one really, you know, if you have a big enough hit, you know, like I have with TV Burp and perhaps with You've Been Framed to an Extent, they forgive you.
Yeah.
They sort of just forgive you. You know, it's weird. It's really weird. And you think of, and any comic has got these sort of skeletons in their cupboard. You know, and it's the same for them too.
Are we going to see any more Alien Fun Capsule? Because that was a lot of fun.
No.
Oh, come on.
No. No, the job is done. You know, since we've done that, there's been no alien invasion. So it was kind of felt like we'd done the job.
Well, they don't want to come down because of COVID. The disease scares them away.
It didn't get the ratings that ITV wanted, is the honest answer. So, and it's quite interesting. I don't think I put this in the book. But what happened was we got the ratings. Actually, you know, we did three series. That's plenty. As Tim Vine said to me, it's one more series than I've ever got from doing a TV thing. So it was a lot of fun, sort of. And the ratings in the last series, you know, they put it out in the summer. You know, they start, you get a sense when
it's
not
a great sign, to be fair. It's not a great sign.
They're not backing it, you know.
Nobody's indoors at this time of day. It's sunny. They've got other things to be doing.
Yeah, they're all out burning sausages. And when they got the ratings right, something, I've forgotten what we were sandwiched between. I think it was like celebrity catchphrase, alien fun capsule, and something. I can't remember what it was. Some big show. And the ratings were like 3 million for celebrity catchphrase, 2 million or thereabouts for alien fun capsule, and then 3 million again for the So it was clear, you know.
There's an indicator.
They weren't just turning over, they were turning off. They would rather not do anything, watch anything, than watch that. Yeah, so I don't know. I think it's, Saturday Night TV has changed a lot. So I think, you know, they're all up against it money-wise, and it was quite an expensive show to make, and they don't really do like up and straight up kind of comedy shows anymore.
Yeah, true.
On Saturday night.
True. No, the kind of flavour of the network has changed. But I loved it for what it's worth. I thought it was a wonderful
show.
Yeah,
I thought it was great. I think, you know, some of the bits on that were as good as some of the best stuff I've ever done. You know, the little hand going out of the Sally, whatever, from Corrie's, her little tiny hand. And and it was fun. It wasn't quite. I think the third series, we got the hang of it, oddly. And that's the other thing with comedy, is it does take you, you know, no, you can't get it right straight. And it's the same with TV Burp. You know, the first three series of TV Burp weren't great, but no, what they put it out at odd times, no one was aware of it. So it meant kind of that we could get it right, you know, under the radar. So that when we did get it right, you know, that work had been done sort of in a kind of hidden way.
Yes, yes.
But now you see, it's got to hit straight away, and that's why sort of quiz shows or bringing, you know, catchphrase back or any of the stuff sort of is a bit more of a better bet for them, I think.
Well, it's just a banker, isn't it? You know, they know that they've got the history.
They think, how bad can it be? Yeah. They think,
what's the worst it could be? Yeah. No, I hear you. So I'm not, apart from obviously Junior Bake Off, it doesn't sound like you're going to be doing a huge amount on telly for the foreseeable. Is that, am I completely
wrong? No, you're right. I mean, I've got lots of projects, but I kind of feel, it was a weird thing with Alien Fun Capsule, because actually when they said, oh, you know, maybe we won't do anymore, I thought, oh, okay, fair enough. You know, it was a bit miffed. But actually, it's been quite nice for me to just step off the, you know, whatever it is, the treadmill slightly, because I always, you know, for God knows, 25 years perhaps, I did a TV show every year, and often two, sometimes three. You know, I do 30 You've Been Frames, you know, 20 TV Birds, you know, so in some ways, yeah, I think sometimes it's nice to have a break, you know, break, come back, you know, and there's no point in just doing TV for the sake of it. You know, I think you've got to do something that you want to do. And actually, you know, the Junior Bake Off gig is the best job I've ever had, I think.
Really?
Yeah. It's just such an easy job for me. Yeah. It's basically,
you just show up.
Sort of. I mean, there's a few things you write, you know, little sketches at the top and, you know, some of those kind of time calls. But most of it, I literally just, you know, walk into a tent with, you know, 10 kids and start making stuff up. You know, and I talk. The thing is, when you watch it, I'm not in it that much, you know, because it's not about me. But the fact of it is, I am there for 1 hour during the technical challenge, and I'm there for 2 hours during the whatever the other one, the showstopper, and I talk all the time. there is absolute gems being cut out of that show.
Just being left on the floor because it's not flower based.
Yeah, but it was a good example for me. You see, having always done stuff that was tightly scripted, you know, I would always write the script, very controlling, and all this. So for me, actually, the biggest challenge for me was to do something where I had to ad lib, and I was never very confident about ad libbing. And they asked me to do it because I did that Celebrity Bake Off.
Okay.
And I just happened to be on, I don't know, I was on good form, I was just mucking about. And they were, and so, you know, I felt like, the part of it is, if you're making it up, you have to be able to trust the production company.
Right.
In other words, if you sort of say something inappropriate or you say something that's not very funny, you know they're going to protect you.
Yeah, that doesn't make the cut. We're good. It's only
exactly.
The gold. Only the gold.
Yeah, whereas, you know, some shows, as we know, a lot of reality shows, and it is a kind of reality show, they want you to trip up, you know, I'm a Celebrity or something. They sort of want a bit of trouble.
Yeah. They want the breakdown and the controversy.
Yeah, they want the, you know, a bit of argy-bargy. So, actually, yeah, I've been really enjoying that. And the kids are just really funny. It's something you learn a lot about. You know, I mean, a big part of my act is sort of me being childlike, isn't it, in some ways? And that gets refreshed just by kind of, you know, talking to them in a way, because my kids are a bit older now.
I was going to say, you've got three daughters, haven't you?
Yeah, but they're, one's
54.
57.
Are you an empty nester then, Harry?
Not quite. I've got a 17-year-old. So
she's okay. Ten. Okay. Yeah, she,
she's facing her mocks half term, and, you know, never took an exam yet, you see, because she's a lockdown.
Yeah, of course. Oh, blimey, that must be very surreal. I mean, I have three sons, and they're also 54, 57, and 17. And I'm terrified about when they go. I mean, the house is going to be quiet and boring.
Oh, I like it. Yeah. Well, me and my wife, we talk about this. We had a baby within a year of getting together, really. So we never really had a lot of time just sort of, you know, doing what we wanted.
Yeah. What happens if you find that you don't like each other? You're like, oh, hold on. It was just about the kids.
Yeah, that's the question's more about your relationship than mine, I think.
No, I'm fortunate. I was with my wife for 39 years before we had children. So we know we can just about hang on. We're all right.
Yeah.
You're the one that jumped in after the year, Harry. That was bold.
Yeah, well, I was old, you know, I was
95.
Anyway.
There it is. It's coming back.
There it is. It's come back. So I'm, the thing is, my kids who, you know, so they're in their 20s, they live in London. So we've got one in Camberwell, one in Peckham. And so I see them, you know, regularly. Do you know what I mean?
Do you vet the boyfriends? Do you vet what kind of a dad are you? Are you the sort of bodyguard dad? Might be girlfriends. I don't want to make assumptions.
I welcome any male company. My three girls, my wife is a woman, and my, well, even one of the dogs is—I won't say it—but is a female dog. So, no, I welcome them. You know, they're all a bit, you know, like scared. I think.
Well, yeah. The famous
that
dad,
age, particularly that age. You know, the 23-year-old bloke. You know, a bloke who's now 23 basically was watching TV when they were a kind of impressionable teenager, and it was a lot of, you know, a lot of teenage boys did really like that show.
Yes.
Something sort of a bit, I don't know what it, anyway, but so it does tend to be that age group that kind of their eyes glaze over a bit if I, you know, bump into them more.
Yeah, they just get a bit scared, basically.
Mm.
Yeah. Well, that's not a bad thing. I mean, that's what you need. Great. You need that gravitas, right? Yeah. Revered. If I could grant you one wish right now, what are you having?
What for lunch? No.
It's up to you. You can do whatever you want. It's your wish. If you want to have lunch, you can have lunch. But it seems like a little waste.
What is my wish? Is the question.
What is the wish that I'm granting for you? Because I obviously have these magic radio powers, as you tuned into?
Yeah, I don't. I'm not sure I have a wish. I would like to. I'd like my wife to stop going on about moving. Is that possible?
I'd never. I can't do that. You could have had anything else. Anything else. You could have had a fifth leg to go with your other four or whatever you wanted, but you can't.
Yeah. Could you put some sort of lock on her laptop? That's Google. Houses. I would like to be able to, with this tour, one of the things that I have struggled with is remembering the stuff.
Okay.
So I would like to, and that is a worry. That is a slight worry.
So a memory, basically. You wish.
So I'm not worried it won't be funny, but I'm slightly worried that I'll forget it.
Could you not have auto cues hidden in different places just as a backup?
Yeah, the problem is, if you have the backup, then you never learn it.
Oh, okay.
So you do have to learn it. So, for instance, and a part of this tour is I'm learning things. I'm trying to learn like things that are very detailed. It's a kind of new direction for me. So I've got this gag about songs. Basically, I go, I start saying, I was thinking the other day, Lady Lay, La Bamba, Label with Love. Lady, Ladies Night, Lady in Red, Ladies of Tramp, Lady Marmalade, Layla, Land of Hope and Glory, Land of Make-Believe, Landslide, Language of Love, Las Vegas, Last Christmas, Last Night a DJ Saved My Life, Last in the International Playboys, Lately, Laura, Lean on Me, Leaving on a Jet Brain, Leave a Light on, Let It Be Me, Let Love Rule, Let's Hang On to What We've Got, Let's Twist Again, Let's Spend the Night Together, Live and Let Die, Like to Get to Know You Well, Long-Haired Love from Liverpool, Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds. Why does Elle get all the best songs, right? Okay. And then I go, I was thinking, Mark Baker, Macarena, Mac the Knife, MacArthur Park, Mad About the Voice. And I go all through
brilliant,
the M's.
Brilliant. Amazing.
So I've been learning M's and I've just been learning N. Crazy. At one point I thought maybe I should learn all the alphabet, but
the
I think
entire.
The rule
well, I mean,
three.
That, no, that's an idea. But what are you? Is there only number one hit singles, or is it just whatever you like?
It's just ones
on your radar.
I just went through like a list, you know, got that book of. Yeah, I suppose they're well known songs.
Yeah.
Nancy with the Laughing Face, Nasty Boy, Nasty Girl, Neighbours, Nelly the Elephant, Nessun Drama, Number Keeper.
Yeah, you're going to need a great memory. Crikey. Amazing.
Yeah, but you can do it. You've got enough time. I can do it.
Well, you got 8 months. Apart from performing at the Park Theatre for one night only, which will be a special spectacular, is there anything else apart from your testing, obviously, the material out? Is there anything else that's filling your time, or have you got that time to dedicate to
I'm working,
memorising songs?
No. Well, I'm trying to give myself enough time, you know, rather than sort of, you know, I want this to be a really good show. I went to see, I tell you what made me kind of want to go back on tour as well. I went to see David Byrne when he came to London. It was a couple of years ago now, and he did his American Utopia.
Okay.
Tour. Now, I'm a big fan of Talking Heads and David Byrne, and he came on, and he could really, it was the Hammersmith Apollo, he could have just come on and sung the songs with a band, but he had this fantastic kind of show, which was all the band were unplugged. So they all had, it was all wireless, it was amplified, but it was, so they were able to wander around, the bass players.
Okay.
They're dancing and moving around, and it was just breathtaking. You know, it was just phenomenal, and the atmosphere was fantastic. And I thought to myself, David Byrne, he's what, you know, 65 or something, he's still really going for it. And I thought, yeah, you need to up your game. Yeah, because part of it is my live shows is a feeling of slight chaos. But what I'm trying to do with this tour is get something which is absolutely bulletproof. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That is just so tight. You know, there's built-in chaos, you know, because there'll be audience participation and you know, I've got this... So that's my aim for it. And I think I just need to spend the time on doing it.
Right.
Is the honest answer.
And that
I've got other things. I've got this film I'm trying to, it's a caveman film I'm trying to get off the ground.
Is it? Does it involve a cassette player and some instructions? What was it, Nando's or something? Is that right? Was it Nando's?
Yeah. You are the only person that only did that. Twice?
No, come on, that can't be right. You've just confined that to your memory of that wasn't quite the best character.
In fact, I was talking to David Earle and Joe Wilkinson about it the other day, because David Earle was there.
The comedians. Okay.
Yeah.
Is that like a thing? Comedians always chat to each other about former gigs.
Well, he was going on at me. Funny enough, yeah. I mean, he was sort of being very sweet to me about. That's the other thing. There's like a generation of comedians who came to see me when they were teenagers. So, which makes me feel very old, but you know, it's very sweet. But he was saying, oh, you're the first comedian I ever saw. And
that's really cool, though. I mean,
huge responsibility.
Well, you don't look your age, Harry. I'm aware of your age. I won't reveal it if you don't want me to. But you...
57.
You're 50, so there you go. All right, you're 58 this year in October. There you go. Look.
Yeah, we'll be by the time probably.
In fact, you'll have just gone 58 by the time you play G Live. So we should have a small birthday party for you. Yeah. Ever so slightly belated. I mean, does that bother you in any way? You know, with the kind of
what?
couple of years from 60, does that mean anything or is it irrelevant?
Well, I think personally, as far as like the act goes, I think it gets funnier. I think it's funnier because my character was always like a kind of slightly fogyish kind of guy, isn't he? I mean, I'm sort of, so to me it's funnier that I am, you know, late 50s and rolling around on the floor, you know, and being like a kid. To me that's funnier. And I think I remember Frank Skinner saying something about how he felt funny. All the time you feel funny, then you're okay. You know, if there's ever a day, I guess, where you think, oh yeah, I don't really feel funny enough. You know, whether other people find you funny or not is another matter. But I think you have to find yourself funny fundamentally in the first. You know, I mean, it's partly a kind of folly. You know, you kind of convince yourself.
Okay.
You know, you have to kind of talk yourself into it in a way.
Like, do you make yourself laugh out loud when you come up with a new gag or a new character or like you've just listed off all the songs and you know the L's and so on? I do, honestly,
but that is not always mirrored by the audience reaction, unfortunately. But yeah, you know, it's very hit and miss writing material. You know, you write jokes and I might think, oh yeah, god, that's really funny. It's just it's endlessly fascinating to me. In that, you know, you can try something and then just change one word in it and suddenly it's the difference between it being really funny and not being funny at all.
Yeah, like if you found out, for example, that I don't know, the letter D would have been the best one to choose from the alphabet,
that's a slight myth. That's the sort of thing that people go on about, funny words and funny letters. I think, you know, I think you can't overanalyze it. I think it's just a kind of instinct thing, isn't it? I think.
Yeah, fair enough. I'm struggling to think of a huge litany of hits that begin with D anyway. So, you know, you're good.
Yeah.
It would be pretty awful if there was instantly tripping off the tongue. Okay, so ultimately the wish is for a better memory so that you can absolutely smash it for your tour, just to come full circle.
That I knew it. The wish is that I now know it all, that I have learned it.
Yeah.
Not that I've got to learn it or have the memory to learn it, but I already know it.
That it's there, it's locked in. Yes.
Is my wish.
Okay.
Is my fervent wish.
It's a solid wish. Excellent.
Yeah.
And are you still using Radox? Because I really struggle to think of that every time I have a bath.
That's like one of the first jokes. So that joke was something like, I bought that Radox. I do like that Radox bath, isn't it? But it's slightly more expensive than the other bubble baths. And so I find when I buy it, I worry about how much it costs me and I can't relax. Something like that, isn't it?
That's pretty much exactly. That's how I do it when I'm trying to do impressions of you. And I do ones about the mosquito and it hits the thing.
And
it restarts its tiny heart. And I think, wonderful.
Yeah, yeah. It just restarted its tiny heart. Yeah, yeah.
Thank you, Harry. It's been an absolute pleasure. I really have loved our chat. You probably can't hear what I've just said, but thank you very much indeed. Yeah. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Really good really to talk to you. It. Thanks, Andy.
Really enjoyed it.
Appreciate it.
Have a great time. I'll see you in Guildford. And maybe at the park. Who knows? Who knows?
Yeah. Or Jez might tip you the nod. You never know.
I will hope so. That would be brilliant. Fantastic.
See ya.
Thank you. Bye-bye. The Andy J Podcast. I love him. I could have chatted to Harry. I can tell you this now that you've heard it. I was only actually going to get about 25 minutes with Harry. And if you noticed about halfway through, around about the 25-minute halfway mark, I do kind of make reference to the time and sort of kind of ish wrap it up, and he then just kind of keeps going. And I just thought to myself in the moment, I'm loving it. As you can tell, I was loving it. I was just like, let's just keep going. If he wants to keep going, I'll keep going. This is great. And so, yeah, there we go. Over an hour with the legend, the maestro, the funny man par excellence, Mr. Harry Hill. I just loved it. That was such a treat. Thank you very much for your company today. I hope you enjoyed listening to that as much as I enjoyed being in it. It was just so much fun. What I can tell you as well is later this week, probably this week, we're still working out timings, probably at the end of the week, we'll be releasing a bonus podcast episode, which will be number 101. With a man called Paul Catamol. Now, if you're not aware of Paul's name, you'll be aware of his achievements. He was one of the seven in S Club 7, which was a genre-defining pop group. In fact, one of the most successful pop groups of all time in terms of finances. You know, they had a string of hits around the world, but they also had spin-off TV shows, I think two spin-off TV shows, a club, a subscription service club, and a movie. So, as well as these amazing brand deals with things like Pepsi and so on. So, S Club 7 were a titanic success, and he was a member of S Club 7. He left, you know, the band, as everybody knows, the band ended, and he threw into troubled times, actually. He was in a relationship with one of the other members, Hannah, and that fell apart as well, and I think he had a bit of a rough old time. He went bankrupt. And very publicly, he did things like trying to sell one of his Brit Awards on eBay to raise money and so on. So he had a rough time of it. And now he is, well, he reads tarot cards and he's a psychic investigator. So he has the most fascinating story to tell, which is why I wanted to make sure that you could hear it in full. It's a long and fascinating chat. I really would urge you to check that out. Then next week, we'll be back to normal business, Tuesday episodes landing. And we have an hour with the incredible Ella Henderson, superstar, phenomenal singer, and someone that's done a lot of good in her world and been a real champion, actually. So I'd love you to hear that. And then coming up over the next few weeks, we've other terrific names as we kind of dive into our hundreds. We've got Spencer Matthews on the way from Made in Chelsea, the panto villain turned good, who now does amazing things with his life and is a happily married man with kids and so on. Kate Humble will be on the show very soon. In fact, I'm going to stop there because there's just so many great names on the way. You'll find out if you subscribe or you, whatever you're supposed to do. I can't remember what it's called these days. You just basically follow the show. And we'll give you weekly updates, or every time something drops, it'll land into your pod box. Thank you so much for your company. We really appreciate it. Go well. I hope you've had a laugh today. I hope this has made you smile and ideally laugh and have a giggle. I've really enjoyed it, and I thank you so much for your company. Go well, be kind, and I'll catch you on the flip side. Bye-bye. The Andy J Podcast.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.